Just a quick note, we are now doing our podcast on our own with our own hosting platform. And one of the things that we are doing is we're recording it live. So if you would like to watch us record the podcast live, that means you get the first access to it. Be sure and join our Mighty Networks page, which you can find at theprofessorisin.com. It tells you right at the top how to do it. And we will put up an event with a webinar link, and you can watch the podcast live. And we would love to have you join us. So on to this episode.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. I am Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of the Professor Is In, and the person who helps to edit your job documents, your grants, helps you negotiate academic and academic adjacent job offers, and writes blog posts and does social media.
Hi, I'm Kel Weinhold. I am an academic productivity coach. I work with you on building a better relationship with your writing. That's what my mission is.
I feel like you do more than that. It's not just your writing. It's how you think about productivity more broadly.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more than just writing and productivity.
Yeah, okay. Your relationship to the thing that you are attempting to accomplish. Is that broad enough? That's the kind of writing I would really support. Anyway, so we are continuing on in our conversation about leaving the academy and the steps to go through to do that. Last week, we talked about sort of hitting rock bottom, what it means to finally say, okay, I'm going to stop fighting this. I'm going to stop digging, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to accept that this is the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And we had you sort of do a walkthrough of your career and find the places that felt really yucky and think about where you could start to insert more positive things. Then we started talking about grief and loss, and that's where we're going to go to now and then on to other things in that realm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about adjuncting and about breakups, and made the analogy that being involved with the academy is like being involved in a bad relationship for many, many, many people, not for everybody, but and that a lot of times you're sitting there looking like, you know, when you're watching a friend in a bad relationship and you're sort of waving your hand saying, oh my God, you need to break up with him. And but the person does not get there, they get there when they get there. Right. And it takes the time it takes. And sometimes the tipping point is something really, really tiny to an outsider, but whatever it is, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. So anyway, That's what we were talking about last week. And so to jump off from that, what do you want to... Well, where we really ended last week was that idea that in a breakup, you primarily think about what you're losing, all the great stuff, and it takes you a little bit longer sometimes to remember all the crappy stuff that you're finally free from.
Mm-hmm.
So
there were two things we talked about at the end last week. And this is another kind of one of those processing things, and... is writing a sort of breakup letter. This is mm-hmm. why I'm leaving you.
Yeah.
But I also think that I guess I wouldn't go just write down the this is all the shitty stuff.
Right.
I actually would.
That's why I kind of stopped weirdly randomly in the middle of a sentence. If you're wondering if our editor cut me off badly, she did not. That was me just literally stopping in the middle of a thought, saying this isn't where I want to go.
And so what I think about and what I do did in The Art of Leaving was actually have people start with what it is that they loved about it. So you can, because the process is to realize that that thing that you loved about it is not inherently it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the opportunity to engage in really challenging intellectual conversations, that's not limited to the academy. So if you start to make a list of what did I really love,
mm-hmm.
because it's really easy to make a list of what you really hated,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with grief, you swing wildly back and forth, right? You mm-hmm. swing back from like, oh, but all these things I lost, oh my gosh. And I want people to start to think of the things you quote unquote lost are not, they don't reside solely in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And that that it can be the thing that helps you swing back from the, I've lost all these things, is to, oh, but I can still do this. And the one thing you do lose is your identity, which I think is a big thing to realize. It's to realize that I've lost my
ability to say I am a professor.
Right.
And that's a big loss. I talk about that a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to see. I did a thing. I don't know what this was for. This may have been for my beta test of the art of leaving, but I did it with a group of people that I had them introduce themselves, and they introduced themselves, and I asked them to please not introduce themselves by title or discipline. And it was just, I mean, this sort of crashing, like, what am I supposed to say? If I don't say I'm a professor of, you know, early American history, what do I say?
Amazing, hilarious, stunning.
Right?
Yeah, that's wild. So, yeah, let everyone listening today, let's encourage you to try that experiment. Introduce yourself without referring to your discipline.
Or your position. I'm a graduate student in economics at, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm an assistant professor at this. I'm a teacher at this.
I'm a specialist in.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also have been thinking about that even more with this. I was talking to someone who had done this really intensive sort of week-long immersion therapy thing that they were with the group of people that they were in with. They were not allowed to say their last names or what they did. And part of it was anonymity, but part of it was you are more than your name and your job.
Mm-hmm.
So what, like, who are you? Mm-hmm. I'm not the CEO of X. I'm mm-hmm. not the, who mm-hmm. are you? So I think it's just really fascinating to think about. And I think about if you take that, right, if you take that away, it's easier to engage with the next step of leaving, which I think of as the next sort of rebound step of leaving is feeling like you failed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you, if you separate yourself from the job, like I'm not a professor, then how do you fail at that? You can start to separate yourself from the idea of because I didn't keep this on this track, I therefore fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very true. I almost think there's something sort of Buddhist in that, but it, you know, like there's somehow a detachment,
right,
which then allows you to separate from binaristic thinking of good and bad and right and wrong.
Right. Well, and one of the things that I think about is how, because of the cult-like odd quality of the academy, once you don't, you start the PhD, right? You get in the track, you go like this, and you don't get a tenure track job. Somehow you failed, and I shouldn't overstate it. So many people don't seem to be able to do the basic math of there were 60,000 of you mm-hmm. and there were 1,000 of this.
Mm-hmm.
How are you a failure if you didn't get it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm railing against. That's all I ever talk about at the, for the first 20 minutes of my post-academic workshops and webinars, is it's only, you know, you have to separate failure from something that is a complete exception to the rule. But of course, you know, academia is not the only field that operates like that, because Hollywood does as well, professional sports does as well. So, I mean, while it's totally true, there is something very more foundational to the human psyche than just a specifically academic delusion.
Right.
It's one that hits a lot of people who are aiming for something that is like, but I dared to dream.
Right.
And like, no, I mean, we don't want to be people who say, well, don't dare to dream. Stop dreaming. Like, we don't want to be that person. And in some ways, I think a lot of people think I am that person.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very negative. But I see what I like to talk about. We've talked about this before. But is that this dare to dream discourse is also very racialized. It's also very much about white privilege.
Right.
It's also very much about this entitlement of thinking that the world is your oyster.
Right.
And that you are entitled. So a lot of that, but I dreamed I could do it. Well, why did you think you had that option? Why did you have that, any of that? Well, and I mean, I don't know. I just like to, I mean, I just think it's really important to put that into, and also why so much of the Quitlet writing is by white people. It's overwhelmingly white, because it's white people who for the first time in their entire lives have found that they couldn't have exactly what they wanted.
Well, and I think that the dividing line there is absolutely dare to dream. Where is your belief? Where did you start to believe that if you dreamed and worked hard, it would work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's there. It's not in the dreaming. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go out, try, do mm-hmm. it. And sort of keep working with yourself each step of the way to understand that just because you dream it and work your ass off doesn't mean you get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of all the people who tried to climb Everest
mm-hmm.
and didn't summit. They did all the stuff. They did it all right. And something didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they may have made a mistake, but a ton of them, the weather turned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I got to get off this mountain mm-hmm. or they're going to find me. You know, they leave me up here. So that's that.
Mm-hmm.
So really starting to unpack the premise that just because you aim at it doesn't mean you have a right to it
mm-hmm.
or that you should expect that it'll work that way.
And that it's a failure that you didn't.
And it's a failure that you didn't. And so if we start to look at that, then I think that the thing that we, that gives you the tools to start to challenge the shame around it.
Because mm-hmm.
I find so many people that I talk to, the debilitating thing is the shame.
Yeah.
It's just this, but I put it, you know, it's I put in this time and it didn't work and something's wrong with me.
Right.
And so how do we begin to counter that shame? So one of the things, I'm going to do it just a little aside here, right? So one of the things that I teach in Unstuck is actually sitting with your mistakes,
mm-hmm.
like getting up close and personal and comfortable with them in the head with, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't finish that article. I'm a lot more interested in, I didn't finish that article. What can I learn from that? Right? Mm-hmm. I just didn't. Okay, that's done. Now, I'm going to get up close and personal with it. It's going to be uncomfortable because I might have to look at some choices I made that I don't feel really good about, but I've got to get up there and intimate with that to be able to heal the potential shame. Otherwise, I just keep it under there festering and it just mm-hmm. gets worse and worse and worse. So, mm-hmm. so if you are thinking about leaving, if the economics have forced you to leave, if you are in a tenure track position and said, screw it, I don't want to do this. I can pretty much guarantee you that there are going to be turns in the road that you took that you regret and that you veer away from them when they come up in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I left this job and I took that job in Illinois. I mean, right?
Yeah, sure.
Right? We can go can go to our decision to leave University mm-hmm. of Oregon and go to Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think I'm still there yet.
No.
That I can just sit up close to that and go, what can I learn from that?
Mm-hmm.
I can do what can I learn from it, but it's still painful
mm-hmm.
because I feel like I lost something that I still mourn.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Grief is all over the place. But if I had stayed at Illinois because I left this thing I loved at Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and if I kept doing it, if I'd thrown, as my mother says, good time after bad money, that's the thing where the shame keeps us in the cycle. And if we can just get back there and say, yeah, I left something that I realized later I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn from that so I don't do that again?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the really hard work of if you decide to leave and you feel this huge regret, how do you sit with that
mm-hmm.
instead of just beat yourself up with it?
Mm-hmm.
What's been your you know, sort of journey with the Illinois job?
I think that, you know, as probably doesn't surprise anyone listening, that for me, you know, there's quite a bit of rage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I express a lot of emotion through anger. I funnel it through there. And so for a long time, I was really angry. And I, you know, I used to, every time there was some new atrocity out of Illinois, and for a while there, I don't see it so much now, but maybe that's just an example of what I'm talking about. But there were so many terrible things. I could name some of them, but whatever. Anyway, I don't see them arise in the Chronicle as much as I used to. And I would post them with some kind of really bitter, ha, Illinois again, UAUC again. And eventually people, I remember someone saying, I'm a little bit tired of this, this page's grudge match with the University of Illinois. I was like, okay, that was like 5 years in, you know, I was like, all right, maybe I can, that, you know, ratchet this down a little bit. Anyway, I don't do that anymore, and I don't have the impulse to do it anymore. I mean, I won't say that it does. I don't have a little flicker when I see an Illinois story cross, and I'm like, snort. But I don't have an impulse to, like, make a deal, a big public thing out of it, or, you know, and it's really not so much anger. So I don't know. I guess I'd say that, but you know, that's a, but I'm answering a different question than the one you asked. I am not, that's not so much about, that's about Illinois, but it's not about Oregon.
Right.
It's not about leaving the decision leaving to leave Oregon. And I don't know that I have really, I don't know that I've really touched that one.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, I have, I mean, I've been in therapy for years and years and years and years since we left Oregon. And I was in therapy before we left Oregon. I was in therapy about all of this. So it's not like I won't try. But I don't know that I've really dealt with it. I think this, the entire thing, and of course it's wrapped up with so much personal, you know, destruction that it's like, I mean, it's too much.
So then I won't put you on the spot, you on the spot with this question that I would ask everybody who's latching on to whatever they're latching on to. And so it may be your hostility toward your institution. It may be your just injury that, that this didn't, that the job market turned out to be what
injury.
It is.
That's a good word.
You're just grief that this lifetime dream is no longer accessible. And ask yourself this question. What do you have to gain by letting go of your current assessment of a choice you made with different information? So what I mean by that is way back when you started, you had a set of information about how your career was going to go, about what to plan, about all of it. And at some point, you saw a path, a particular way. Then you got to a different place in the path and had different information. And Oregon thing is a perfect example of it, right? So you're at Oregon, you, Karen, are at Oregon. You're making, you know that the ceiling on what you're going to make, you know the ceiling on what you're going to, what kind of prestige you're going to get, what kind of treatment you're going to get. You know that you're in the compression with salary.
And I was super ambitious and super wanted to be ambitious, someplace higher status.
Right. So you made all those decisions based on the information that you had then, right?
Also that my family was in the East and I had two little children and I thought getting closer was the most important thing I could possibly do for my kids.
Right. So you do all those things based on that information. Then we make moves, we make choices, we do different things and the information changes or the situation changes or something changes and we have a lot of trouble letting go of we'll just keep on with that, right? We move. Illinois for us was not a good fit. There was a whole lot of personal stuff that it was really more challenging than we realized, you know, visiting family and, you know, they were in Pittsburgh and then they were in Florida. And then it was like, oh, okay, we're 8 hours from Pittsburgh where you're not. But that was a great move. I mean, there was all this sort of stuff. And then you start to assess your original choice as a failure when you didn't have that information, right? So how can you let go of your assessment of it based on the old, like it failed because this is what it was supposed to be instead of this is what it is. Now I'm going to deal with that.
I don't know the answer to this because I'm so completely consumed by the failure.
Right. And I think, you know,
so
this was
so
we did not start this on this podcast to go down your personal failure feelings, but I think it's so valuable. I mean,
is it though?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I mean, I know it's valuable in a therapy sense, but is it valuable for our listeners who came in trying to find out 25 skills you can take forward into your all day career?
No, I mean,
failure.
What if we were just sitting here?
This would be a great time. I mean, if we had the opportunity for someone to comment Right. It'd be like, is this of any value?
No. Karen, come back from your abyss here. Come here. Come back. I think actually I still struggle with this. It's really hard. The choices were painful and I am still grappling with them. Is the radical honesty that we need to not act like, hey, this is just a matter. Here's what you do. You re-examine your skills, right, and you put it into a resume instead of a CV, and then you get a LinkedIn, and there you go. It's like, fuck no. Right. It's just really painful for many reasons. And it doesn't have to be personal, painful, divorce, all child custody, blah, blah, blah. But everybody has their own heart wrench. So I do think, Karen, that, I mean, I don't know. Maybe for some people, they'll think, well, wait a minute. You've been out 10 years and there's still this grief around this. And and I'm sure that, you know, I could say, yeah, because we carry grief until we get up and close personal to it. And you're ready when you're ready. So you're, So I don't know.
Well, no. I mean, the thing is this is all just going in a very strange turn that neither of us expected, but I'm doing heavy therapy this week, and so this conversation is completely touching something that is a wide open wound this week.
I would not have brought that up.
Well, and if we had talked about this last week, and in fact, I get asked this all the time. I like, how do you like your post-academic life? And I'm like, I love it. It's fantastic. I could not have imagined how much happier I could be. I'm so much happier. I get to have the stuff that I loved about the academy and absolutely none of the crap.
I don't have to grade.
And all this other stuff that is so gratifying, like, which is the one thing that is priceless, is being my own boss. You know, I do not have someone over me telling me what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And for someone who's like me, you know, kind of a pill and a malcontent and whatever else, free spirit, that is the best thing in the world. So I would never have known that. And I could have probably had a career in academia that worked. I could have done it. I could have stayed until retirement. All other things, you know, without the giant divorce and custody and, you know, the personal turmoil that made that choice untenable in Illinois. So I would have continued on doing that thing, never knowing that this other thing was out there. When I talk to people about leaving the academy, I think that's why I hammer home so strongly, you don't know what's out there. You don't know all the things that you're good at. You don't know all the capacities and attributes and talents you have that you can manifest that right now are being completely squelched and probably disrespected in the academy, and that they're just waiting for their chance to shine.
And I think that, I mean, you and I have talked about this about a ton of different things. You don't know how something's going to go. And it's letting go of this idea. And we're back to the very beginning of the podcast, right? Letting go of the idea that you know how something's going to go. And that your effort, and that there's some kind of meritocracy, that I put in this much effort and I did this thing, therefore I should get this thing. And really unpacking that, but also just knowing that maybe when you started, things were not what they are now. And I guess that's what I was really trying to get to, is that if you assess your original choice, if you beat yourself up for your original choice based on the information that you had then, just because you get new information does not mean that was a bad choice for then. It was fully formed, thought out, exactly what you wanted to do, and then you got new information or new experiences or new whatever. So, you know, it's kind of like the people who started their PhDs in 2008 or 2007 and a half. And they started out, even in 2008, they started out with an idea and it collapsed. And you started your PhD in 2019. Mm-hmm. You really didn't know this was coming. Mm-hmm. So if you're beating yourself up now that you put in all these years, and why did I make this choice? And why did I do all that? And why did I move five times? And why did I delay being able to buy a, you know, car, mm-hmm. whatever.
Or have a kid.
Right. Beating yourself up for that choice mm-hmm. when your assessment is based on new information, that's the part I'm trying to like, that's mm-hmm. not a mistake, mm-hmm. which is different than what I was saying originally, is like sit with your mistakes. But I guess the way I would say it is.
Wait, did you say that though? Did you say sit with your mistakes?
I said that. I was really an advocate of getting up close and personal to mistakes, not to beat yourself over the head with them, but to uh-huh. see what you could learn from them.
Okay.
And but, we took a turn, uh-huh. as we often do.
And now maybe we're thinking the word mistake is not.
Is a mistake.
Is a mistake.
I'm saying that we went in two different directions. One uh-huh. is like, or the regret. Let's say it's regret, uh-huh. right? So you regret that you took, that you... You decided to pack up and leave your family and friends and go live in the deep south to do a PhD and you did it and you got your degree from, you know, University of Alabama and now there's no job and you've spent 6 years dislocated from places and now what are you going to do? And there's friendships you're going to have to leave or you're going to have to stay and you're going to, I mean, there's all this stuff that you can see as a mistake. So maybe that's it. You see it as a mistake uh-huh. when it was a thing you decision you made based mm-hmm. on the information that you had. Mm-hmm. What can you learn from it?
Right.
Like
my challenge is not so much the regrets as it is. And I know, I already know what you're going to say. I already know it because it's one of your mantras, but it's looking at other people who didn't make them.
Yeah.
And then saying, but look what they were able to do. Yes. That's my problem.
I know. Well, it's not your problem, but it's your pattern. It is one you're hanging on to with both hands. Yeah.
and as for any of you who don't know this, and I don't know that there can be any, but I guess maybe first-time listeners. And oh my gosh, if you're a first-time listener and this is the episode you came to,
go back earlier.
Go back. They're not all like this.
Quite like this.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes. Which is one of my main teaching points.
One of your main teaching points in a view of both the Buddha and Teddy Roosevelt. Right. The latter being the one who actually said it. But yep.
But notice I did not. I just said it is your pattern.
Yes.
That's all I said.
Yes.
Yep.
But I think that's the sticking point. I mean, for me, uh-huh. is like I have a pretty, I mean, I'm pretty good at being like, I know who I am. I know why I did what I did. I know why I decided to do something different. But then I look at all those other people who didn't make all those ridiculous decisions. And anyway, it's just, I really struggle with it.
Yeah. Well, the other part of that is there's that, you know, that therapy thing of you're comparing your insides to people's outsides.
That's for sure.
So just because they've managed to do something, laying on them happiness or mm-hmm. feeling successful or any one of those things is just making stuff up.
Yeah,
because you're roiling around feeling like a failure in multiple ways. I'm not saying you, Karen. I'm saying you, listeners, mm-hmm. roiling around thinking you're a failure and you see somebody else out there doing stuff. I think that COVID is a perfect example of that, right? You see these people. The vast majority of people are barely keeping their head above water. Getting up, getting dressed is, you know, a huge accomplishment. Getting fed, that's a lot to ask out of yourself. And then there's that outlier who's, you know, produced 3 articles. Mm-hmm. And it's because the way they manage their stress is to overwork and hyperproduce. And because you get caught up in a capitalist notion of what success is, you're sitting here struggling to get your teeth brushed. Mm-hmm. And beating yourself up thinking, oh my God, that person got 3 articles out and I didn't even get the trash taken out this week. I suck. Instead, because you have no idea what it's like to live in the mind of that person. You have no idea how much angst, torture, terror, whatever mm-hmm. it is that they're going through mm-hmm. and that the way their particular neuroses are manifesting themselves is to stay glued to their computer and desperately produce work. Mm-hmm. And so it's only when we fall into what's makes you valuable in capitalism that you think that's the valuable thing. And my ability to, you know, bake a cake and just sit here and eat it all is not valuable. Well, who the fuck says it isn't, right? Maybe not all in one sitting.
I wish a cake-centric value system were one that we lived in.
Okay, so let's. This was an extremely disjointed thing, but the which we say a lot these days, but it's just COVID, and this is what you get. And some days, someday we're going to come out of all of this, and we might make linear sense, or we may be permanently changed in our inability to actually track. So you get what you get, folks. I want to
say this. If you are listening and you are really desperate to get some concrete advice on how to leave the academy because you really, like, your rent is due and you need to do something to bring in some revenue, my webinar recording going post-ac in a pandemic is very linear. And
advice-based.
It also deals with emotions because I think emotions, like we're talking about today, are absolutely central to anyone's ability to make that transition effectively. But it doesn't stay there and then goes directly into very concrete advice. So we got you if you need that right now. And then come back here for our podcasts as we continue to unwrap this and get to advice eventually as it arises.
Great.
So to wrap up, this quote from Rumi that you were showing me seems like it's a good thing to end on. Here it is. So I hope you find this useful. Life's water flows from darkness. Search the darkness. Don't run from it. Night travelers are full of light, and you are too. Don't leave this companionship.